Hello, everybody. This is Jace. Welcome to episode 417 of the Comic Source Podcast. This is the Valiant Sunday panel from San Diego Comic-Con 2018. The audio quality is pretty good for the most part. Some of the panelists speak a little softer than others, so it may be a little tough to hear at times. But I know a lot of fans on the Valiant Fans forums wanted to hear the panel, so I was able to record it. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time.
How's it going, everybody?
Awesome.
All right, good afternoon. It's the 13th annual Valiant Fans panel here at Comic-Con, which time is crazy. Lots of exciting things happening for the world of Valiant. Obviously, the Bloodshot movie gets underway filming next month, August 6th.
Yep.
As you know, Vin Diesel is, or maybe you didn't know, Vin Diesel is playing Bloodshot. And we got a release date on Thursday, which is pretty cool. February 21st, 2020. So that is the one to circle down on the calendar. It's a little far away, but we're excited nonetheless.
It needs time to cook.
1 week after Valentine's Day, right? I think so. Yeah, we're in the Deadpool spot, basically.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, something like that. Other things going on in the world of other media with Valiant. Obviously, we know Quantum and Woody is coming from the Russo brothers. That's going to be on TBS now, according to what we read. And then a solo Faith film.
That's right.
And they just got a writer for that.
Maria Melnick from American Gods is going to be writing Faith.
So that's really exciting.
Yep.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Well, we're here for the comics, right? We're here for the comic side of it. So that's why these lovely guests are with us. So why don't we get started by having everybody on the panel here introduce themselves, what they do at Valiant, and because these are fresh faces, except for the gray-haired gentleman at the very end there.
The most handsome gentleman on this panel at the very end.
All right, go ahead.
Start with me. No pressure, no pressure. My name is Joseph Village. I'm the new executive editor for Valiant, and I'm happy to be here.
My name is Matthew Klein. I'm the director of sales for Valiant, and I'm also happy to be here.
I am Peter Stern. I am the director of international publishing and merchandising, and I've actually been with the company since 2012, so I'm not that new, and I'm very happy to be here.
Still has that fresh face on him.
Into his 50s, he'll have that fresh face.
It's true.
Hi, I'm Mel Kylo, the director of marketing at Valiant Entertainment, and I won the poker tournament last night.
Yeah! The big champion.
Rub that in.
Robert Myers, editorial director. And of course, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy you guys are all here. This is such an awesome tradition. We're really excited to be part of it.
Here, here. I'm
Josh Dysart, and I'm writing a book called Life and Death of Toya Virata. And I'm happy to be here.
All right, well, before we jump into the future, which is the Valiant future stuff, let's talk about a little bit about Harbinger Wars 2. That's the big event for the summer, right?
Yeah, fair. Robert, you want to take it away with that?
Sure. I mean, so Harbinger Wars 2 is a story we've been building to for the last 2 years, really starting with events in Harbinger Renegade, Generation Zero, all the way through... Is that better? All the way through, you know, now the launch of the actual event in Harbinger Wars 2 Prelude. Issue 3 is on sale, or just about to be on sale?
Next week.
So issue 3 is incredible. You're going to see Bloodshot in a place that he's never been before, which is in shocking, really. And then, you know, we've got 2 more issues. 4, of course, will be the big conclusion to the event. The status quo for the whole universe is going to be kind of set up for the next few years. I think one of the biggest outcomes of course, is going to be the impact of Livewire's actions on the Valiant universe, and that's going to lead directly into the new Livewire ongoing series, which is coming in December.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, past that, for me, it was a really exciting time to come to Valiant because, as Robert pointed out, Harbinger Wars 2 is going to kind of like set the new rules for how the PSYOTs relate to humanity, especially how they relate to the military-industrial complex, where their positioning is going to be in society. You know, it's interesting because if you start with Harbinger War One, you kind of feel like the PSYOTs went through an interesting arc, kind of going through being a secret community, then a community that was publicly outed by Axe, and then, you know, a community that is basically fighting for survival as the Hardcore and Omen takes more aggressive steps to eliminate and contain them. So Livewire's, you know, statement, you know, in the fight for her people by throwing the nation into a blackout, you know, that's the kind of situation where it actually escalates tensions. You know, it was meant to be a line in the sand to say, you know, I will not accept, you know, your attempted genocide, your attempted containment, but basically it's going to escalate tensions. That's going to really inform what's going to happen in 2019. And, you know, the redefinition of what a PSYOT is in humanity, the capacity of what it will take for a PSYOT to be seen as a hero by society. And these are things that we're going to explore in the back half of next year. So for me, it was really an exciting time to come on as someone who's been reading the Valiant books in terms of the relaunch. That man at the end of the table there is totally responsible because I was a big fan of Unknown Soldier that he wrote for Vertigo. And when I read that he was going to be writing Harbinger, you know, I said, that is the craziest mashup I've ever heard in my life. And because of that, I must buy it. And Harbinger number one in 2012 was the book that brought me in. That was my gateway to this universe. So I have a special affection for the PSYOTs and for the story of their place in society. So for me to come in at this critical point in their big story, for me, was really great. And this is a good time to expand the universe. And so, you know, I'm really happy. I'm really looking forward to working with these people to do it.
Thanks for saying nice things, Joe.
You're welcome. Just put my check in the mail, please.
All right, so we're two issues in for Harbinger Wars. We had the prelude, and of course we had Heisner's amazing kind of secret weapons lead into it, which was just...
Yep. Yep.
Unbelievable. Yeah. My favorite moment so far, and if everybody hasn't read the first two issues so far, it was simply one page from issue two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was you know, the scene with Amanda going to Russia. Mm-hmm. And that one page. Yeah. And talking to our friend Divinity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, really, all you have to do is end this with a snap of your fingers, and he's like, yeah, but what?
No one's going to learn anything.
Nobody's going to learn anything. How's humanity going to... It's just simple little things like that just was like, wow.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the next two issues, that's for sure. So
yeah, it's going to get crazy.
Good, I hope so. It's an event. It better be. So since we are halfway through it, what kind of ramifications are we going to see? Is that the next four titles you guys have kind of announced,
mm-hmm.
Beyond that... obviously, Livewire is going to deal with that. I'm assuming Bloodshot's going to deal with that with Project Rising. So, anything else that you can tell us that leads us into that? Is that where this is going? This conflict when it reaches its plateau?
I mean, all of those things. The universe as a whole is going to be affected by this. We're going to be able to see the ramifications of this event, not in a singular book, but in the entire line going forward. Bloodshot Rising Spirit is actually going to take place before the 2012 Bloodshot. So, but it's going to be, you know, we're going to learn things about Bloodshot, and the aftermath issue kind of has a very nice segue into Rising Spirit, into a place where you're going to be able to see Bloodshot in a whole new light. The Livewire book is, of course, building directly out of this. But we're going to see other notes as well. Faith Dreamside is going to be not so much directly related to the event, but it's really about what happens when human beings, be they, you know, us or you know, above normal, what happens to us when we go through trauma. Dreamside really deals with the real life effects in a kind of superhero context.
Yep. And also, like, Anomalia is kind of like the impetus for Faith Dreamside, and Anomalia has really gone through a lot. Generation Zero, Harbinger Renegades, Harbinger Wars 2. She has survived the attempted annihilation of her people. She's become harder, a warrior at an accelerated rate. She hasn't been allowed to really be a teenager. And so something is going to shake her to her core, and she's going to go to Faith for help. Yeah. So, you know, even in that way, that's going to be something that is going to branch off from Harbinger Wars 2, but branch off in a way that you can enter the story there in a very smooth transition.
And while we can't really go into specifics about 2019 outside of what was already announced, Incursion in February, and Life and Death of Toyo Harada in March, I will be, or we can say that we will be launching a new number one every month next month. Next year.
Yep.
So you'll be getting 12 new number ones coming out next year. That's probably the extent of what we can talk about right
now.
That's
right. Yep. We have the publishing plan laid out. You're going to see a lot of familiar names. We're sure it's names you've been waiting for. And it's going to be really fun, you know?
Awesome. So let's go back to Bloodshot Rising Spirit a second. You guys have a pair of new writers, mm-hmm. two Valiant, Lonnie and Zach.
Yep.
See, like you said, Robert, you said the story's going to kind of go back to that before the 2012 series.
Right.
So it's kind of a spin on Rey's origin, correct? Is that what this is?
Yeah, and it's really, it's not just Rey's origin, it's the origin of the science that led to what Rey is. So it's a deep dive into his psyche. It's a deep dive into what happens when you force someone to be someone they're not. It's a take on the nanite technology and it's kind of the memory technology that we haven't seen yet that I think is brilliant.
I feel like writers are going to be ripping off it after the next 10 years.
Zach and Lonnie are incredible. They do just tremendous research. And the scripts that have come in they're beautiful. They're actually very much like a Josh Dysart script. I'm not kidding.
I don't to say anything up here.
They're
showered in love.
Yeah. They're really building something. They're new voices in our universe. They're up and coming voices in our medium. And we're just thrilled to have them. And then we get a legend like Ken Lashley to join us on the team and to just elevate the story that much further with just incredible visuals.
Awesome. I was most excited when I saw the Livewire announcement that we're going to have some more beautiful art by Raoul Allen and Patricia Martin. So that team is just unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. And what it does is it creates a kind of trilogy with Secret Weapons, the Harbinger Wars 2 Prelude, and the Livewire series. And you talked about your favorite moment in Harbinger Wars 2. Mine was actually page one of the Prelude with Amanda walking and the sounds and the buzzes of all the technology around her, and how that was a straight homage to the cover of Harbinger number one in 2012. So the idea that, Raul and Patricia came back to do Livewire is going to be this perfect trilogy and through line in the evolution of the Livewire character. So we're really excited about it, having them on board. It seems like, Livewire has been around since Harbinger number three, but we really feel like Raul and Patricia have, in a sense, created like a new visual archetype for Livewire. So having them, launch the character into the ongoing series just made perfect sense for us.
Right, you just mentioned, I don't know if everyone in the room knows that we did promote it from a limited series to an ongoing series. We announced that yesterday.
Yep.
So it's going past four issues. The pre-buzz on the announcement took us really by surprise. So we thought that we would do that character justice by extending her storyline.
Are you guys going to continue doing the pre-order bundles on all these new books also? Have you made a decision on that yet?
Do you guys like them?
Yes.
All right.
Well, that's
all right.
Market research that we can take back.
Exactly, exactly. We got that straight from San Diego.
We'll definitely be doing one for Rising Spirit, and I think that the majority of our titles are going to have some form of it in some way. Yeah. Because we've seen a tremendous response to it, and why
They're
not just build?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hopefully we see some of that into each of the new number ones or something like that into the next year. So let's talk about the reason a lot of us are excited about the Toya Harda story, Life and Death. So, Josh, it's been 2 years since we've seen your name on anything from Valiant. So kind of give us an idea of where it's going and what this is all about.
Yeah, well, this was always the intended conclusion. What Warren and I used to call the PSYOP cycle. So this started in Harbinger, and we told the story of those kids, and it continued in Imperium as we told the opposite side of the coin with the villain, I guess. And now here we are at the end. So it's something I've been crafting and thinking about for a very, very long time, and Toya Harada has started living inside of me like a real person a long time ago. So writing this book is my, you know, it's my love letter to him and my love letter to everything that we managed to achieve over all this time, and I'm really excited. I think it's going to be really good. And I'm really happy with the way, through the transition, the way the project has like kept on momentum, and my editor Carl is awesome. I'm a big fan of him. He's fantastic. So the art is just looking stupid awesome. Cafu is literally doing the best work of his career. It's extraordinary what he's doing, and he fought for the job. We were doing a book tour in France. Cafu and I, when I had all the scripts written, but he had no artist had been assigned yet for reasons I have no idea. And
we were waiting for you and Cafu to get together.
That's what it was. Like the universe needed us to.
I told the editor they had to wait around until Cafu got around to it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm willing to wait. And we like were training around, and I was just sort of telling him about it because you know we had worked together on Imperium, and he's a fan of this stuff, and he. And as I told him about it, you could see like he would start to like writhe in his chair, and you could see him like sketching. And I thought, man, if we don't give it, I mean, this guy, you know,
The man's doing the best.
Maybe
work.
There's a better artist in the world than Cafu. I don't know, but but no one will love it as much. Like no one will have as much passion. And you totally see it in the pages. It's a whole new level for him.
They're beautiful.
All you have to do is follow Cafu on Instagram and see what he's been posting from Life and Death of Toya Harada, and you can just see like he just wants the book to come out now.
Yeah,
he wishes we could fast forward to March and just show you now.
Except he's not finished,
right? But it's pretty coming along good. Did you all see the cover for number one? Did you see that image? Oh, we have to figure out a way for you to see that.
Well, I have it on my laptop, so maybe we can show them.
Oh, now
we
have no AV. Would be dope for everyone who wants to stand
outside of the room, though.
Yeah, that cover right there makes a statement.
Yeah,
you know, of how important this book is. You see that in. There's no way you're not picking that up.
Yeah, no way. So I'm it's really happy. You know, there is no other publisher in the industry right now where the industry's at that would have allowed me to spend 5 years telling a novelistic narrative. It just wouldn't have been, particularly in superhero stuff. So the fact that it's coming to fruition now is a real testament to multiple visions throughout, you know, throughout the company. So I'm really, 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 really proud of it. I think it's gonna be fucking badass, Clever.
Yeah.
I think so.
Nice. All right, so let's do this. If you want to see that cover that Mel was talking about, after the panel, we'll go outside. He's got it on a laptop and you can just ask him and check it out.
Yeah, we'd love to share it with you guys.
Awesome. Is there anything, Mel, maybe you can talk about for Incursion with Diggle and Brathwaite? Or are we going to just have to wait for that?
You're going to have to wait.
I can talk about it.
No, you can't.
Mel is not allowing any of us to talk about it.
I mean, Mel,
No. Zip it. Nothing right. We'll wait. Let's wait. Sorry, I don't mean to see you. to come up as mean, but I'd like to save
Mel
some things.
Give Mel a little bit of power.
It's kind of impossible for Mel to come off as mean because he's the most huggable human being alive. So, but he's doing his best.
But I mean, the fact that it's coming from Andy Diggle, you know, you're talking about one of the most popular writers in comics today. His influence on, you know, Green Arrow cannot be overstated. Doug Braithwaite is a staple in the industry going back way back. But I mean, what he did on DC Comics Justice series, he's basically one of our superstars. Like, those are the people that we brought to the table for Incursion. So that should tell you it's something important. You should read it. It's going to be like our first kind of like micro event of 2019. And when you read it just from the very first issue, you're going to get what the importance of it is to some very significant characters.
Okay.
Yeah, it builds on the entire mythos of the Valiant universe. It's really
That's
just
right.
an incredible story.
Yep.
I wanted to go back to Bloodshot Rising Spirit for a second because there was one little thing we announced yesterday that we didn't mention here in case you hadn't seen. Matthew, you want to tell them what we announced yesterday?
So, who here has liked how the brushed metal covers have come out? So, the metal covers have been wonderful, but as they say, metal is out and glass is now in. And so we have announced, as of yesterday at the San Diego Comic-Con retailer lunch, a 1-in-250 tempered glass variant on Bloodshot Rising Spirit will be the first of a series to come out. Yes, we're crazy, but it's the good kind of crazy. So, but yeah, it's really exciting. We've got the prototypes in the works right now, and we've been exploring with how to print on it and just all the cool, crazy designs and Doug Braithwaite doing the cover is
yeah,
oh, it's so good. I said nothing.
I heard that.
Darn right.
You can't get off on technicalities, Matt.
I can try.
I'm gonna talk to you after this.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, well, one thing that we never have time for enough of is, you know, a question and answer kind of situation. So why don't we open that up, and we got the mic out there. So, you know, a lot of these are new faces up here. A lot of you guys are meeting them for the first time. So fire away and go for that.
Hello. I have two quick Shadow Man-related questions.
Love your shirt.
Thank you. I made it myself.
Oh,
nice.
Wow. I like the one on the shop. I own that too. But yeah. This one Jack is currently wearing, it's like missing the top of the head, so I want it to be like accurate.
Nice. Love it.
I'm a loser. Whatever. Anyways, so I wanted to ask about if there's any new movement on the Shadow Man movie. I know that like a couple cons back, someone mentioned some movement, but there hasn't been anything since then.
Confidential.
Okay.
I might have gotten an email last week. I might not have.
That's a good way. That's a good answer.
And second, with I know you can't talk about Incursion, but Shadow Man since 2012 has kind of been in his own little world. Like, hasn't really. I mean, he showed up in Divinity 3 and stuff like that, but he hasn't really been heavily influenced by the universe. Is this Incursion kind of his welcome to the universe at all? Is he going to be more intertwined with other things as well? I know that magic is his thing, but is he going to be showing up other places? Or
only Mel can answer this question. He's the only one allowed to talk about this. Mel?
You'll find out a little bit more in the coming months. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I can tell you.
Thank you.
It'll be soon, though. Don't worry.
Rucker.
I just love looking at all of you smile right now. I promise I'm going to be nice.
Don't make us
You
cry.
Say that, Rucker, and then in 30 seconds, you're going to drop a bomb on
that.
Us.
I'm going to be nice.
I didn't come with a flak jacket. I'm totally vulnerable right now.
I'm ducking behind.
I'm done here.
I'm ducking behind people. That's all I'm saying.
Is this a three-part question?
Yeah,
more of a comment than a question.
Okay, go.
Something you guys haven't talked about, but is Josh was just mentioning with Kafu and how much he loved 4001. One of the things that always set Valiant apart was you had two separate timelines that affected each other. There was always things going on currently that you could see in the future, and we've heard nothing about Rai or the Eternal Emperor or anything else going on. So what's the plan for the future of 4001?
It's huge. It's no, we definitely have a plan.
2019, you'll be very happy in 2019.
Yeah, there's a big comics-wide event in the middle of the year. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for around there. I think it starts with a free and ends with a day.
Maybe.
No, we're excited. Actually, Carl is working on that right now. So it's in development. We don't have details for you yet because that wouldn't be as much fun as waiting. But yes, it's coming.
Thank you very much. See, that was nice. Yeah,
oh wow, and only the one question. Okay. Thank you.
You're always nice, John.
Yeah.
Well, first I just want to make certain I welcome some of the new folks. You know, hey, like, you know, Joe, heard one of your interviews shortly after you were named to the position and, you know, gave me all the great feels about where the company was going.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Cool. So Eternity wrapped not too long ago. Eric has returned to Earth, and for the foreseeable future, things are kind of terrestrial bound with Harbinger Wars and everything. Will we be getting any more of the Valiant cosmic stuff at some point?
Oh yeah. Joe, do you want to...
Any hints?
Wow. What can I say? What can I not say?
Joe loves cosmic. There is one thing we can say, because I believe the information.
What is that?
The next arc of EXO after Harbinger Wars 2 directly deals with the events from the cosmic side of the universe.
That's right.
Right. And we're also going to see some ramifications from the first year of Matt's run in the arc following.
Yeah. Excellent.
Hello, sirs.
Hello.
Great shirt.
Thanks. Yeah. Now, one thing that kind of frustrates me is I'm like in between series, characters sort of end up just shelved out of circulation for long periods of time. Do you have anything coming up for Archer and Armstrong?
Yeah, do you?
We love those characters very much. That guy might have something to say about those characters. That's we got a chair right here for you, sir. We don't have a nameplate. But we have lots of love to give. Oh, you're gonna sit over there? Okay. No, sit over here next to me.
Talking about
Fred Van Lente, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just dropping.
Here's what I can honestly tell you. 2 weeks don't go by where we don't talk about those characters.
Yeah.
We love them very much. They're a staple going back to the first Valiant. There's a very deep core relationship between the two that we're going to explore more and unpack. And what we want you to know, and it's really important, is that there are so many gems in the Valiant universe, and what we owe to those characters and what we owe to you as fans is that when we bring them back, we bring them back in the best way possible. And when we bring them back, they're not going to go away easily. You're going to want to see them again and again and again. We love Archer and Armstrong, so keep your eyes open.
Yeah, they're the characters that brought me to Valiant in 92. Like, I love those guys. So, soon.
Hey guys, what's up?
Hello.
Hi. So, I'm actually a big Quantum and Woody fan, and I just want to know what the updates are for the... There we go, the one other guy. See, people actually like Quantum Woody. People like funny. Thank you. There we go. What's the status on the TV show right now? And then my question for Joshua is, so the life and death of Toyo Harada, so is this like his midlife, post-life crisis, like, you know, he's realizing how much he's effed up, or is this kind of like his, this is your Don Quixote of sorts as well?
Harada's Don Quixote or mine? Because it's close to my Don Quixote. My Don Quixote. Is it his mid-post? I mean, you know, one of the things that I thought was so interesting about the character after the kids in Harbinger outed him was that he became reactive instead of proactive, out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because it's completely out of his wheelhouse, makes him uncomfortable, you know. So that was exciting, and it was fun. But what's more fun is when Harada's smarter than every single person in the room. And what's more fun than that is when every person in the room is incredibly smart. So, you know, what this is it's Harada pressed up against the final wall. Everything has failed. His most recent attempt, this is his third attempt to control like the planet, has completely failed. And what is he going to do? You know, what could possibly be done when the world is coming in on you? All of your allies are now your enemies. So that's what it is. So it's not so much a midlife crisis and that he's, you know what I mean? A midlife crisis is something we generate and we emanate out in the world and we get a fast car and we date someone half our age and we make asses of ourselves. But this isn't that. This is Harada with no choice, no choices left. It's the life and the death. So, but you'll learn a lot about him and his motivation. And you know, you think you know everything about his past, but you don't. And you think you know why he makes his choices, but you don't. So there's a lot there. Yeah. So that's what, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's yes, where Harada is. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
As far as the TV show, there's nothing more than what was reported a couple of weeks ago than that. It's in development at TBS, the Russo brothers are producing, the Ant-Man and the Wasp screenwriters, Baron Ferrari are writing a pilot episode. So yeah, I mean, that's the most promising news that we've received in the last couple of months. So, you know, we just hope that the pilot gets shot, and once it gets shot, TBS orders it to full season. So yeah. As everyone in this room knows, Hollywood moves very slowly. So. It's really excruciating sometimes, but you know that's the nature of the beast. But we're optimistic.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
There's been a lot of talk about the future of Valiant, but I want to go back to the past. I'm a huge fan of the old Nintendo comics that was put out by Valiant back in the day. And for years, I've wanted to ask if there was any chance there'd be any reprints or collected editions of that stuff to easily get, because those old issues are expensive.
So I'll field that one. Cannot make any promises there, but we did have a conversation about them just this morning.
Oh, wow. Nice. Very cool. All right.
And we found one on the show floor.
Yes.
Oh,
if anyone knows where I can get a copy of the Game Boy series, yep. I'd be interested in picking that up. just for me, though.
We'll post Peter's personal cell phone number on Mel's laptop.
Yeah, right after the Harada cover.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
It'll just be like in flashing lights on front top of it.
Thanks.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey,
how are you? This question is for Josh. So you say that now Toyo feels like a character that lives inside of you.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, as far as the evolution of, you know, when you first came in on, you know, 2000, I guess probably pre-2012, and really got an idea about Harbinger, and I just wondered how the character may have evolved for you, or what you may have learned about him over the years, and what kind of maybe surprised you about him.
That's really interesting, because some of those things are nonverbal. Like, I don't really know how to express how he evolved, but he definitely did. I think if you do a full read of Harbinger, you can see Harada change. The intention is the same and everything, but there's something not quite complex about him. There's not, you know, he's not quite, he doesn't feel quite real enough to me yet. But I think, that's such a hard question to answer. How does something grow inside of you? You know, it's just a garden, and you grow this guy, and every choice he makes, you know, at first he makes choices because it's convenient for your plot, and you're like, oh, I think this will be cool, and you like intellectualize it, and then he starts making choices on his own, and then he starts breaking your plots. That's when it gets really interesting, and then it gets, in, you know, where he's easier to write, but everything around him is more difficult to write, because he won't do what you ask him to do. He won't do what you need him to do to make everything work. And so I think that's the moment when you realize you've spent a lot of time with a fictional character when they're like breaking your stuff. And as far as how he grew is, obviously working on Imperium was a huge leap. Once we stopped looking at him through the eyes of the kids, and I stopped looking at him through the eyes of the kids, it changed a lot. and he became much clearer to me. But, you know, he comes from a very real place inside of me, which is an anger at the way the world is run. And at how people, you know, 20, I mean, not to be a downer, 25,000 children starve to death a day on the planet. And I threw away food today. So, you know, that Harada comes from this anger, but it also comes from the fact that I threw away food today. I'm part of the problem. Like, he's part of the problem, too. So he's just a magnified everything, my flaws and my anger and the poor choices I would probably make from my place of anger. That's what he is. So the more I sat with that, and quite frankly, in the more, you know, we began to see the Syrian refugee crisis over the time of me writing him. And I got involved in that, and I went to Iraq, and I spent time with refugees on the move, and I did the same in South Sudan. And so the more I spent time in these places that my fictional character was furious about, that anger became very real, and he became a much real, more real character. So I think my engagement with the world colored him, you know, entirely.
So he's kind of a manifestation of your frustration with a lot of the vices in the world that you see.
Yeah, and but absolutely. But also, he's a manifestation of my frustration with utopian idealism, because it makes me angry that it's an existential anger that utopia, for some reason, the species can't create a utopia. And we're all guilty of it on all sides, and I don't know why we can't do it. I don't know why we don't love each other enough to do it. And so that's what he is. You know, he's like, so, you know, he that's why he makes unhealthy choices, and that's why he makes bold choices that are the wrong choices. Because in the end, he's operating from a place of anger and frustration.
Sunlight on Snow could do it.
Yes, actually, Sunlight on Snow could do it. And in fact, I've pitched, and I don't know if anyone has ever heard this, and I have no idea how we'd execute it, is a miniseries in which Sunlight on Snow runs for president of the United States.
Dope!
Because
and
his policy would be, we're going to be the first global power to use completely non-lethal technology to defend our assets around the world. And so that would be, you know, it would be the first, like, we have. So, yes, Sunlight on Snow could do it, but Harada keeps him shackled.
We need more Sunlight on Snow.
I agree. What would Sunlight on Snow do?
Thank you.
All right, Brian, next year we're going to change the name of the panel to Toyo Harada Spotlight.
No.
I mean, he's like the most interesting character in Valiant. So, you know, we've talked many times about hero or villain. You know, we did a whole show on it, talked for hours. And so I want to ask everybody, because even you, Josh, I don't know if you're aware of it. When you mentioned him earlier, you said villain with the air quotes. So I want to, each of you, hero or villain, Toyo Harada.
Are you going to start with me? You should start with Fred.
All right, start with Fred.
Villain.
And maybe you can give a little reason why. not to throw you.
Hey, man, you moved the goalpost. Yeah.
Cheating, Jace, cheating. Harada's a hero. Yes, I said that.
Waiting for the why.
Oh, really? Are we catching up with that?
Yeah. No.
You know, I think part of being a hero is when you believe something so doggedly and almost everybody else believes you're wrong. And you have the capacity to engage the discussion through your actions. Please.
I think he's a villain because I think he thinks he's a hero. Yeah. And that's always where people go into error. That's when they start thinking a little too highly of themselves.
Too much ego.
Yeah.
I like both those answers.
tragic villain.
For in much of the same vein, actually, that Fred is talking about, I think he has the capacity to be a great hero. But there is something inside of him, and I think Josh speaks of it very beautifully about that anger, that the place it comes from actually cannot help but lead him down a villainous path.
I would say that he is a hero, and he is a hero in, like, the most basic definition is just he's a person who wants to make the world a better place and is willing to sacrifice everything else that means anything to him to do it.
See, by that definition, I think he's a villain because of the sacrifices he's willing to make to achieve those goals. So I'm a little yin and yang with you.
Well, I don't believe in heroes anyway.
Was it my turn?
It's your turn.
Gosh. I think he's both, which I know is a cop-out answer. But,
yes, it is.
Really, for all the reasons, though, right? He's a human. I mean, he's a psyop, but he's a human. He's flawed. He acts from a place of good, but he acts in a fashion that is, I don't want to say evil, but is not good. So if you base your definition on his actions and the outcomes, he's a villain. If you base your definition on his motivations and his intellectual point of view and his internal point of view, he's a hero. So if I had to flip a coin, it's whatever the coin would say, I guess, but I'm gonna say hero. But he's also a villain.
See what you did, John? I know. This is awesome. This is exactly awesome. I prefer not to answer.
You're the only one that could possibly get away with that answer.
Exactly. Is that because it's so much of you in there?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, look, I'm not going to say how I feel about it, but because I don't want it to taint, like, the reader's experience, you know? I don't want them to be, like, definitively, he said. But I will say this. This is I'm going to say exactly what you and I have talked about in the past, and I may even be quoting you on this. If you're the person who lives in a famine zone, and he elevates that region, and suddenly you can eat, and your children can eat, and they can go to school, and your future generations will be able to participate in some sort of equal society, then he's a hero. But if you're that one person who has to die so that he can achieve that, then he's a really bad person. And so what, you know, at what cost, right? At what cost utopia? And can we seed utopia through violence? And ultimately, I believe the lessons of the last century were that we cannot seed revolutions through violence. That every violent revolution we saw occur actually propagated more violence ultimately. So I think that in the long run, Harada cannot achieve his goals. And if he can't achieve his goals, and he's doing it at the cost of human life, even a small amount of human life, you know, because he fights against, you know, Megadeth, and but if he can't achieve his goals, and then those losses don't amount to our end result, which is every human being living with equity and respect and food, then it's not worth it. And if it's not worth it, then I will not definitively say he's a villain.
Yeah.
But if it's not worth it, it's not worth it.
By the way, as an aside, a cover came into my inbox the other day for an upcoming issue of Toya Arata and by Kafu, and I immediately emailed the chain. I was like, oh my god, guys, don't you think Ken Watanabe would be great as Toyo? What do you guys think? Do you think Ken Watanabe could pull off Toyo? That would be my dream casting. I'm not trying to say that he has been casting anything. I'm just saying it's my dream casting.
So don't wait to get us back on brand, Mel.
Don't put that on the
net. Thanks for the question. That was interesting to hear everyone.
That was great, Jace.
I wonder what the panel is after ours.
Brian, you got a question?
Sorry, go ahead.
I got kind of a question. As there are a lot of new readers coming into Valiant, and that's what we all want as fans, and they're trying to get that stuff in their hands to read it, there's a lot of your collected hardcover bounds that are out of print. Is there any talk or anything like that to maybe put some of those back into print so that they can get those, you know, those collected editions besides the traditional trade paperbacks? But a lot of those are very, very difficult to get, and I'm sure a lot of fans would love to get them in their hands again.
On one point, one of the most egregious things that's been out of print is Rye, which is going back to print for a trade paperback volume one. As far as the hardcovers, it's still an ongoing discussion. It's been for probably too long at this point, but Peter...
So I can address that.
Yeah.
I mean, the purpose of our deluxe hardcover program is it is a deluxe format, a deluxe edition. So the perk point there is that we put a lot of care and effort into them and that we're very, very concerned about the quality of them. And to that end, we print to what we expect. And after they sell through, we don't ever rule out the possibility of reprinting them, but it depends on what kind of expected demand we expect to see. But the typical practice is going to be that they will remain out of stock for a while,
we're very serious and very careful about them. So we don't want to just rush back with them. We don't want to go to a cheaper source for printing. We want to make sure that they remain a very durable and very valuable part of people's collections. Something that stands up.
That's fair enough. The only reason I bring it up is one of the most important characters just recently went out of print, and everybody here may know that is Divinity. That collection is now very difficult to find. I mean, there's going to be some out there, but something like that, in my opinion, should be readily available. But that's just my opinion. So,
well, one thing that's also important is we have the multiple versions. So as Peter said, we have to be really careful about the deluxe editions, but when deluxe editions are not out, we make sure that the trade paperbacks are out. There are different ways in which you want your story. Some people want like the magnum opus and they want the trilogy in one shot. They want to spend an entire day and say, okay, I want to read all of this. Some people want their bite-sized doses. You might be a parent and sometimes you might need to take care of your kid. And you might be like, I can't read all 12 issues of Divinity right now. So we try to make sure that the stories are accessible for you in one format or another. We offer really good price points for our books, and it's because, the quality has to be there, but they also have to be available for all of you and all of the new fans that are going to be coming to Valiant. So in one way or another, our stories are available for you, and thank you for supporting them.
Awesome. Okay, we've been told to wrap it up. Again, if you want to see that cover to The Life and Death of Toya Harada outside, Mel will have that on his laptop. And again, and thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, guys.
I would like to point out, I just wanted to add one more thing. Our redoubtable logo and trade dress designer, Ryan Hughes, one of the unsung heroes of the Valiant Universe, who designed almost all of our current logos, is downstairs. He's got this book with him, Logo A-Go-Go, where he runs through the process for designing a lot of logos he's worked on, including a whole bunch of ours. So if you want to go check this out, I think it's booth 5541.
All right, cool.
I like that the only thing Fred got to talk about was my character. That makes it...
I know.
And you had nothing to say about Archer and Armstrong. Not a thing.